there is this nice jump from I didn't even notice it to I at least I noticed it, to not only did I notice it, I took it to the next level.
This is Choose to be Curious, a show all about curiosity. We talk about research and theory, but mostly it's conversations about how curiosity shows up in work and life. I'm your host, Lynn Borton. Welcome. Come, choose to be curious with us. If you've been listening to the show for any amount of time, you likely know I'm a big walker. What you might not know is that I'm also a bit of a chronicler. I almost always have my phone with me when I walk, mostly so I can snap random pictures as I go. I like to collect images that might someday be paired with a guest's pithy insight for a lovely little graphic for the webpage I create for each episode. I don't really know what I'm looking for, other than things that catch my eye, something pleasing, whatever that means. But sometimes I'm on the hunt for something specific, often very specific. A quest, today's guest might call it. Periodically, I set myself a theme and a duration. 77 days of feet, a long hot summer of art, a month of biophilia, a week in the kitchen. And then I just keep my eyes open and my camera handy. It's a joy. The thrill of the hunt, the challenge and delight in finding something new in the very familiar. The excuse to get outdoors, whatever the weather, the visual puns, the surprisingly sentimental moments, all culled from the everyday world around me. It is very much in the spirit of what journalist and author Rob Walker would call the art of noticing. Rob is a longtime contributor to the New York Times and a columnist for Fast Company and on the faculty of the Products of Design program at the School of Visual Arts in New York. His 2019 book, The Art of Noticing, and newsletter by the same name are joyful little encyclopedias of attention and discovery, or what I would call curiosity practices. He shares useful ideas, practical prompts, unexpected inspiration that help us pay attention to what we care about and care about what we pay attention to. The art of noticing is, as he puts it, for people who want to stay interested in life. Full disclosure, I subscribe to his Substack newsletter. I've been learning from Rob Walker's wide and wonderful noticing for some time, and I'm delighted to have him join me today from New Orleans. So welcome, Rob.
Well, thank you so much for having me and for the lovely introduction.
Well, thank you so much for all of the wonderful introductions you've given me to my days. I can't tell you how much you accompany me on all of those walks, as I mentioned. And, you know, you write in all sorts of places. I keep discovering new places that you write. But I have to say that one of my favorite things that I came upon that you'd written was meaning is where you find it, even by accident. And I thought that kind of sums up at least the art of noticing, maybe not all of your work, but the art of noticing, do you think?
Well, I certainly think it's true. It's probably a through line, whether I think about it consciously or not.
Yeah.
You know, I like to be surprised. I like to look where no one else is looking. And I do think meaning is where you find it. So we're under a lot of cultural pressure to keep up with what everyone else is paying attention to. And my message is to not worry about that so much and listen to yourself and what you want to pay attention to.
So what I love about it is this balance that you strike between intention and accident. You leave yourself open to whatever, but you do that in a very purposeful way.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because as you were doing the introduction, you were saying, sounds like curiosity to me. And there is the word curiosity and the concept of curiosity came to me a little bit later. I kind of backed into this subject and my approach had more to do with attentiveness and openness to the world. And I've come to think of curiosity as kind of a step beyond that of a more active, I think of curiosity as an act, a thing that you actively do. It's the decision to not just notice, look at that interesting door, but to go ahead and open that door and see what's behind it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that because I was thinking about this very same question about, I don't know if it's a developmental sequence. I don't want to call it a hierarchy, but there is a difference between notice and attention and curiosity. And yeah. I was wondering how you thought about those. And I've noticed in your writing over time, you use curiosity relatively sparingly and very intentionally when you do, I think. And I wondered about this very question about whether notice and attention are sort of gateway drugs to curiosity.
Exactly right. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. When I started this, what has become this sort of ongoing project, when sort of the precursor to the book, I was thinking very much in terms of almost reacting myself to the so-called attention economy. I used to write a lot about I still write about advertising and branding for my journalistic work. So I was thinking a lot about how much effort goes into directing our attention and how you really have to make an effort to fight that, in my opinion. And, you know, now this has gotten to be a more and more familiar point. We've got these phones with us that are constantly alerting. It's not just advertising. It's our friends. It's news. It's all kinds of things that are struggling for our attention. So I was very interested in this practice of trying to combat that and be open to what you're missing or what you could see in the moment. But I thought of it as there was a specific incident that made me think of it, and it's something I saw online. It was a kind of viral video of a group called Improv Everywhere. Have you ever heard of them? So they had this video, and basically it depicts this woman walking. There's a park, and there's a decal on the ground, and this is sort of right after the COVID peak COVID era, so it looks like one of those. You know, keep 6 feet apart. But instead it says, stand here for dance party. First of all, most people don't notice it. Second, among those who do notice it, most people look at it and they go like, oh, that's weird. And maybe take a picture and keep going. And then finally, this woman comes along and looks around, looks at this thing and stands on it. And Improv Everywhere has arranged so that everyone in the park suddenly bursts into a dancing in the stand. It's really sublime. And I was like, that woman is really my hero because that's an act of curiosity. That's like you said, I don't want to build a hierarchy, but there is this nice jump from I didn't even notice it to at least I noticed it, to not only did I notice it, I took it to the next level. I went the other way. I went in the direction that no one expected me to go. And maybe sometimes when we do that, maybe most of the time when we do that, what happens is absolutely nothing. But every once in a while, what happens is, you know, something that wouldn't have happened if you hadn't taken the act, if you hadn't taken that extra step and pursued the curiosity. And you are absolutely right that since that moment of seeing that video, I have thought very intentionally about how I use the word curiosity. And I'm not trying to draw distinctions, but I am trying to be mindful of like, what does it mean? And it's got its own qualities to it. And that sense of activeness and agency is a big part of that to me as I work through it. I'm still in the process of working through what I think about curiosity.
Yeah, me too.
That's why I'm excited to be here today. So I'll stop rambling.
You know, I've had more than 250 of these conversations now, and I'm still figuring out what curiosity is and how we think about it and whether we're talking about one thing or many things for which we use a single word. But I think agency is a constant throughout all of those possible definitions. And it is an action. I mean, it's no mistake that I call the show Choose to Be Curious. It's a choice to take this action, big or small, but to sort of go one step further, not just think, huh, but huh, and.
Exactly.
And I love it for a lot of reasons, but I've really come to appreciate it both for the delight that it brings, like this woman on the, you know, on the dance party sticker, but also because, again, it's this interesting way to thread this needle between we're both at peak distraction, as you have written in some places, and constantly having our attention pulled to things, which is like the effect of distraction on us. I mean, distraction is something that happens to us, and some people are trying to pull our attention away to distract us from one thing and put it someplace else. And I feel like curiosity is totally self-directed. Curiosity is something you decide, you know what, that's where I'm going. And maybe you're distracted from the thing at hand, or maybe that's really your primary focus. But it feels like an act of independence, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's an act of, I think it's core to what you're curious about speaks very directly to what you're interested in, what motivates you, what you are all about in the broadest sense of the term. I, with students, preach about this all the time because I think particularly for young people breaking into a professional world, they are very concerned with, both for professional reasons and personal reasons, of being up on what everyone else is up on. And I understand that, and that's important. But if that's all you're up on, if that's all you're paying attention to, by definition, you're not, there's no way for you to stand out. And so that's why you should really be tuned into what you're tuned into and trust yourself and trust your instincts. And if it's, I tell the story in the book that was kind of core to my thinking about this one trip I took to San Francisco where for various reasons I decided I had to do a lot of walking around. I didn't have time for real sightseeing, and I'd been to San Francisco a number of times before, so I didn't have that fresh off the plane, like, wow, I've never seen this before. So I decided I would just look for security cameras wherever I went, which is not exactly a romantic. Anyway, but, you know, I was sort of interested at the time. I was interested in security cameras and where are they? How do they look? Where are they absent? Are they drawing attention to themselves? Because some security cameras are very used as almost deterrents. Some are very hidden. And I found that following that ridiculous instinct, which had no payoff beyond itself, really, you know, gave me a fresh look at the whole streetscape of San Francisco and made me notice things. It just redirected my gaze. I wasn't looking where no one particularly wanted me to look at security cameras. They wanted me, people had gone to great lengths to make signage and advertising and things to direct my attention. And then I did end up, of course, writing something about it, which is the joy of being a journalist is that you can sort of convert all of your weird curiosities into work, which we can come back to. I don't think that that's necessary, but I think it's these things have an end payoff in themselves. But yes, I think that when you learn to listen to your own instincts and trust your own instincts, there's nothing but good things that can come from that.
You're listening to Choose to Be Curious, conversations about curiosity and work and life. I'm your host, Lynn Borton, and I'm joined today by journalist and author Rob Walker. We're talking about the art of noticing. Well, I'll tell a story of myself. Yesterday, I went out for a walk and I thought, I'll do one of Art of Noticing. Oh, I'll just look for a color. That's an easy one.
Yeah.
I live in a pretty urban area. There's lots of signage and products and things that are labeled with red. And I was getting a little bored because it was all things that were kind of predictable. So I was like, I want to find red that surprises me. Where will it surprise me? And I was walking across the street and there's a Microsoft office there. And I looked at the logo and I thought, oh, absence of red is actually surprising me because in the four colors of their logo, you probably know this better than I would because you do branding and design, that orange is much less red than I would have said it is if you just asked me what that logo looks like. And it was this wonderful moment of being delighted at discovering the absence of the thing that I was looking for in a surprising way. And it was like this confluence, actually, of about seven of your art of noticing practices. And I thought that's the kind of thing that happens when you're paying attention.
Yeah.
That you notice, I mean, you see things or you wonder about things or you challenge an assumption that you had. I have a game that I call I Wonder. I walk around and I'm like, I wonder what kind of stone that is. Mm-hmm. And it's a way of making the everyday intriguing. It's a way of kind of inviting the stories, I guess.
And fun.
Yes.
I was just thinking, I'm sure that there's some kind of neuroscience that we can break out about how that keeps your mind nimble and things like
that. Yeah, I talked to other people about that.
The amygdala and all that stuff. But it's just fun.
Yes.
You know, that's what I try to sort of come back to often. Don't worry about whether this is a box you can check. It just makes life more enjoyable if everything can be converted into a sense of discovery and a game and childness. Now, you know, don't get so carried away that you're walking into traffic.
Right.
But I think it's a real skill or not a skill. Yeah, it is kind of a skill. You know, you mentioned the color walk. I just did a episode or whatever you want to call an issue of the newsletter on the color walk theme, which is something that comes up a lot because there's so many ways to do it as you're just demonstrating this now. I just recently had the experience of being on a bike ride and getting focused on color and deciding to just focus on not color in context, but just the zeroing in on the block of color and pure color so that you have no context. And then you come home and you have this bunch of colored squares on your phone as the evidence of your trip, which is sort of absurd, but kind of exciting and makes you, you know, it's one of those things that just throws a switch and all of a sudden the way you're looking at the world is completely changed.
Yeah.
Does that make you live 10 years longer? I don't know. But
you know, and even if it doesn't make you live 10 years longer, I think it's 10 better years. I mean, I'll posit that.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you a craft question. You had a nice piece that you wrote about Dan Heath's podcast about asking craft questions about people's jobs. Like, how do you do the work that you do in finding ways to notice and harvesting those things? How do you actually do that?
Well, it's integrated into life as it has to be. And I mentioned earlier how I kind of backed into this in kind of almost reaction to the other professional work I was doing, which was about the attention economy. And I kind of started what I'm preaching to my students, which is I'm trying to notice what I notice and pursue it so that instead of like this color game that we were just talking about, instead of just telling my wife about it and, you know, her being as thrilled hearing the 900th variation on this as you'd expect, to figure out, well, what can I do with this? Are other people interested in this? Can I turn this into something? So it's the only word I can use is practice. It is a practice that I'm always jotting things down as this is a potential subject. I do try to, on the craft question level, I haven't been doing as good a job of this lately, but I do try to bring in voices like Dan Heath and other guest prompts so that I can get particularly things where I don't have as many strengths. Dan's a good example of someone who he has really good question skills and dealing with other people on this kind of professional level, which isn't necessarily my greatest strength. I'm very much a city person. I can name like maybe four trees, you know.
Uh-huh.
I'm just terrible at that. But I'm interested in it and I'm interested in getting better at it. But that's the kind of thing I'm working on someone now who's a big gardening person, and I'm trying to get from that person a set of prompts that I couldn't come up with, because I don't have the right set of inspirations and expertise in my head. So it's kind of a nonstop process. I mean, I think that the goal, and this is hardly my exclusive insight, but the goal is to have as little boundary as possible between what you're doing anyway and what you're doing for the work.
Mm-hmm.
For work. So it's trying to convert my interest into work and trying to do that in a way that is as open as possible. So I'm a professional journalist, so I have a lot of experience in packaging ideas to work in a publication for a specific predetermined audience. what interested me most about the newsletter format was doing an end run on that, where I don't have to convince an editor that people will care about this. I don't have to build in, well, here's the payoff, quote unquote, here's how it helps you get a raise or something like that. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. I was just interested in, as a writer, I'm in my 50s now, I've been doing this a long time. I'm interested in, well, what boundaries can we push? Can I really do something that's just about a color walk that doesn't have a clear, quote unquote, payoff, and get a response and get people saying, oh, I do that too, but I do it this other way, or this is a really good idea, I'm going to do it. And that's really satisfying. And that's something you can only find through the kind of experimentation that this format allows, and a kind of porousness between life and work that sounds maybe dangerous, but I think that it's, if you tie them together in positive ways, that's my craft. That's how the work gets done.
Wow. That's like a life lesson in choosing one's path right there. If you can find that braided approach that sort of does all of those things for you, does the work that we need as a society, but also the work that we need as individuals, and I would argue the work that we need as creative beings. I think there's a need that we have for this, a pretty primal need that we have for this kind of discovery. And I think there's something kind of radical about reclaiming it.
Yeah, there's definitely an audience for it, in the sense of there's a hunger among some people. It's not for everybody.
Right.
I've told this story before, but in the process of putting the book together, I talked to a lot of people, experts on various things. And I talked to a really well-known productivity expert. I was curious about this. He's a smart guy. And I was like, so my hypothetical was, say you've got a business trip to Cincinnati and you're going to have 8 hours of nothing to do before the one thing you do. Like, what do you do? And I figured, like, this guy's going to have some really cool tips for how to explore a place. And he said, well, I would stay in my hotel room and work because I'm not interested in Cincinnati.
Wow.
Yeah. And okay. So that's a different way of looking at the world. Now, that is, the guy is a recognized productivity expert, and he's probably right that that's the most productive thing to do. But I think it's really sad not to be interested in Cincinnati, you know? And Cincinnati is obviously a random city, but just like, yeah, okay, so it's not a place that was always on your bucket list, but you're here, you have the opportunity. How can you make the most of it? Now, that's a worldview, yeah. And it's not everybody's worldview, but it's enough people's worldview that you find that there's an audience for it that's not being addressed.
I guess it depends on how you define productivity. I mean, there are a lot of ways to be productive.
Yeah.
A lot of things to measure as success. So each his own on that one. You say something somewhere about, let's stop trying to be so productive all the time and make an effort to be more curious. And I was like, yes, this is my guy.
Yeah, well, I think you mentioned at the top this sort of overlap that this has with serendipity and chance and things like this. And this is a big, to me, hard to quantify, but very real payoff, if people like a payoff, to this mindset, which is that you are being open to surprise and you are being open to chance. And to go back to the Cincinnati example, you're more, if you decide to take a walk through downtown Cincinnati, you're much more likely to randomly encounter something that has some payoff for you later, some inspiration, some piece of chance, than you would have if you very efficiently answered all your email in your hotel room. Those are just different ways of looking at the world, but I'm a big believer in chance and in increasing the opportunity to be surprised. And sometimes it takes a little willpower to give yourself some parameters, like, you know, looking for the color red everywhere you go, just to mix up the way your mind gets you out of the rut, gets you out of the ruts are very efficient in a way. You know, if you want to really be productive, maybe you should find a rut. there's very little friction. And yeah. I'm into the idea of, like, let's create some fun friction, the way that you do when you're a child and you're bored and, you know, you invent a game out of everything.
Yeah.
There's some spirit of that I think is very worthwhile and can have quote unquote payoffs, but is often, just as often to me, its own payoff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think so. Well, if we had a neuroscientist here, I think the neuroscientist would actually say, in fact, that diversion, that breaking up of the rut is actually where the insights and the innovation will actually come, that you can't rut your way through some of those things. You actually have to get out of the tracks at some point. But speaking of surprise, I'm going to throw you a little curveball and invite you to join me in my big jar of wannabe analogies. Okay. You game for this?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Okay, so here it is. Literal big jar. Slips of paper. I have one for you, one for me, and one for the audience. Yours is a UFO. How is curiosity like a UFO?
Okay.
Mine is sunburn. And I have one for our listeners. Do you want to go first or do you want me to give it a shot first?
You go first.
Okay. How is curiosity like a sunburn? Speaking as somebody who's fair-skinned, sunburns happen. And I think curiosity happens. And sometimes it can be really uncomfortable. But it can also heat you up. And it's sort of evidence. It's evidence of having been out in the world. I guess that's how curiosity is like a sunburn. How is curiosity like a UFO?
Well, okay. So curiosity is a mystery, right?
Nice.
Curiosity. Some people can see it and some people can't.
Very nice. Nice.
And curiosity sparks, like a UFO, sparks endless and surprising conversation and speculation and imagination and more curiosity, you know?
There you go. That's the best I can do. That's great. Okay. And audience, yours is dust. How is curiosity like dust? Let me know. Instagram, Facebook, hashtag analogy. Well, Rob.
That's so fun.
It is fun. Thank you. Thank you for doing that with me. And thank you so much for this conversation. This has really been a pleasure.
Well, I had a ball. Thank you for having me and stay curious.
You've been listening to Choose to Be Curious. I'm your host, Lynn Borton. Thank you for joining us here today. You can find all my episodes on my website at choosetobecurious.com, along with a whole gallery of those themed photo collections. I hope you'll follow me here, there, and on Facebook and Instagram at Choose to Be Curious, where you can share your dust analogy, hashtag analogy. Many thanks to my guest, Rob Walker. Links to The Art of Noticing on my website. Thanks, too, to Sean Ballack for our theme music. And this is Inessential by Bayou Birds via Blue Dot Sessions. I hope you'll join us again next time. Until then, choose to be curious.